Fall revival gets 2.5 weeks away. Let's go ahead and get our Bibles open to 2 Samuel chapter 16. 2 Samuel chapter number 16, getting back into our series for 2 Samuel. We heard a little bit on Sunday night. We're going to build off a little bit from that. 2 Samuel chapter 16, we saw David's son, Absalom, is trying to steal the hearts of the individuals inside the kingdom. And we looked at how they did that. We talked about Sunday night, and we compared what Absalom did to what the devil does in our lives. And the Satan's trying to steal our hearts. He's trying to steal our affections. And we talked about how Absalom adjusted his image and how he made accusations towards the king and how he appealed to the people's pride. We talked about how the devil does the same thing. He tries to get people to adjust his image. He wants people not to see him as someone who's wicked, that doesn't care about him, care about you. He wants to devour, wants to destroy, doesn't want to show you what he could do with your life, but instead he adjusts his image, or he adjusts your image of sin. He also makes accusations towards the king, and he says he doesn't care. It's not going to be fair. And tonight, we're going to look at the title of tonight's message is How Not to Get Your Heart Stolen. There's some characters inside this story as we watch David fleeing from Jerusalem whose hearts were not stolen. They stayed strong with David. And I think there's some interesting things in here that we can learn and we can grow from, how not to let our hearts get stolen from the devil, and how things we can do to help us stay strong and encouraged in the work of the Lord. The third thing, Absalom appealed to their pride, just like the devil appeals to our pride, telling us that we don't need a king, we don't need someone telling us what to do, that we are smart enough to figure it out on our own. But God tells us we're completely and utterly dependent upon him. So really, the only way you can look at this passage of scripture and cover any type of ground is just to read the story. As we read the story, we'll give you some commentary, kind of fill in the blanks for the story, and we're going to read the rest of chapter number 16, and then we're going to look at just a few verses at the beginning of chapter number 17. Actually, it's 15 over, we're in chapter 15, excuse me, and going to go to chapter 16 for just a few verses. So chapter 15, going to start in verse number 7. Chapter 15, verse number 7. We'll just say verse number 6 just because that's where we finished Sunday night. It says so 2 Samuel 15, verse number 6, and on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. So he went back. He was deceitful, and he stole the hearts. He didn't do it the right way. He made up lies. He did whatever he could to cause people to love him more than David. So now David, he's going to steal the hearts of the people. He's going to try to overthrow David. David is going to flee for his life, and he's taking some people that are with him. Verse number 7, it came to pass after 40 years. Now, you read that, and you think, 40 years, that can't be, 40 years after Absalom, because of when David died and his ages died. You go and you study it out a little bit, 40 years maybe from when David became king. 40 years, and this would mean that would be David's last year reigning. I don't think that's the case. I think it's maybe 40 years from when he was anointed to be king, when God looked at him as being the next king, or even that 10-year mark when God had put his hand on David. So it's 40 years, and we're thinking that it's probably 33 years into his reign here. That Absalom said unto the king, and look at how Absalom is presenting himself. I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow, which I have vowed unto the Lord in Hebron. Now, if you look at it, it says, for thy servant vowed a vow while I abode in Geshur in Syria. Now, this is when he was separated from David. David, he had ran to be able to a city to where he could not be punished for killing his half-brother Amnon. David would not allow him to come back to Jerusalem. David did that, finally allowed him to come back to Jerusalem, but would not see Absalom. Then David allowed him to see Absalom, and now he's coming after probably 3 or 4 years of being there and serving. He goes and says to them, I want to go to Hebron. He says, I made a vow when I was in Syria. He said, if the Lord shall bring me again indeed to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord. So he's saying, when I was over there, I made this commitment. I wanted to come back to Jerusalem. I wanted to be near my father. I wanted to be near the king. I wanted to be near the place that God had set up to keep his name. And he says, I promised God that if I got to come back to Jerusalem, I would go pay a vow in Hebron. Now, what do we know about Hebron or Hebron? It's the place where David reigned for about 7 years when he was in charge of the Judah. It was also a place that was known for having the ark for a period of time. It was a place of worship. So he's saying to the king, I need to go back. I need to pay this vow. Now, remember, Absalom's not just his subject. Absalom also is his son. And so it's hard to tell you when your son comes up and says, hey, Dad, I want to go somewhere and do something spiritual. Usually you want to say, yeah, please go ahead. So that's what David does. David turns around and says, and the king said unto him, verse number 9, go in peace. So he rose and went to Hebron. It says, but Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as ye hear the sound of the trumpet, then shall ye say, Absalom reigneth in Hebron. He doesn't want to pay any type of vow. He probably didn't make this plan when he was in Syria, but he doesn't want to pay a vow. He wants to try to overthrow David. So he goes and he sends out spies throughout the tribes. Now, this could be that some people might think that David died, or maybe that David has resigned and Absalom's going to be the new king. Now, remember what he has done back in verse number 6. He has won the hearts of the people. He has treated them with kindness. He has treated them like they were equal. He always kind of gave in to them. He changed the way he was viewed. He adjusted his people's image of him. He adjusted what people thought about him. And he went ahead and he made bad accusations toward the king. So he has a group of people that love him already. Not only does he have that, he has other people that went home and said, hey, we met the king's son, Absalom. He's a really great guy. He's a really regal guy. Remember the chariot and all the footmen? He is going to be a great next king. So when this comes and these spies start coming into the tribes and these messengers start coming in and saying, hey, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, then shall ye say, Absalom reigneth in Hebron. And when Absalom went 200 men out of Jerusalem that were called, and they went in their simplicity, and they knew not anything. So 200 men went with Absalom, which would not be unusual for the king's son, especially if he was a king apparent that he would take a group of people with him. The thing you notice here is that they do not know what's going on. Now, in the world's eyes, in the tribe's eyes, you can see that these men that are confidants of David's and David's loyal subjects are going with Absalom, gives a sign to the rest of the people that they must agree with what Absalom is going to do. Verse number 12, Absalom sent for Ahithophel. Now, Ahithophel is an interesting character, and a little bit later on, we're probably going to have a message about Ahithophel. Ahithophel was also the grandfather of Bathsheba. And we remember what happened with David and Bathsheba. And Ahithophel has a little bit of bitterness in his heart, and you're going to see that later on, that Ahithophel was trying to overthrow David also. The Gilonite, David's counselor. From his city, even from Gilo, where while he offered sacrifices. And it says, and the conspiracy was strong, meaning that this overthrowing of the kingdom was becoming stronger and stronger, gaining more and more substance. For the people increased continually with Absalom. Continually, more and more people sided with Absalom. In verse number 13, there came a messenger to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom. So they come and say, David, there's a problem. There's a working amongst all the tribes. The people are starting to go after Absalom instead of you as king. Now, David has one of two responses. He can go and he says, okay, we're going to fight, or he can flee. And David said unto all his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, arise and let us flee, for we shall not else escape from Absalom, make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us and smite the city with the edge of the sword. He said, why wouldn't David fight? He's a warrior. And I believe you see it, the reason why he doesn't fight is in the last line here, and smite the city with the edge of the sword. He loves Jerusalem. He has built this city. He has won this city for God. It has become the capital, and he doesn't want to see his subjects be put to death. He doesn't want to see people that come and they want to fight for David, and he doesn't want to see the war. He doesn't want to see the city destroyed. He doesn't want to see unneeded bloodshed. So he says, instead, we will leave to go and fight another day. Now, we always remember this and kind of remember in the back of our mind, David, because of his sin, was going to be punished. And this is part of God's punishment for David. David sees this. David understands this. And he does not want the city to have to suffer for his sins. And then it says in verse number 15, and the king's servants said unto the king, behold, thy servants are ready to do whatsoever my lord the king shall appoint. they're loyal subjects. He says, whatever you think is right, David, we're going to follow you, and we're going to follow and do whatever you say. And the Bible says, and the king went forth, and all his household after him, and the king left 10 women, which were concubines, to keep the house. Now, they were there. I don't know why he left them behind, but it is actually a fulfillment of Scripture. If you go back to when Nathan was telling him the different things that were going to happen and the different punishments that was going to happen, talks about him, someone else from their house lying with his wives, and this will be fulfillment of prophecy, but that left that open. And the king went forth, and all the people after him, and tarried in a place that was far off. So he travels for a certain portion. Now we're going to get ready to read a bunch of fancy long names that I'm probably going to mispronounce, but I'll do my best, but just bear with me. And all the servants passed on beside him, and all the Cherethites, and all the Pelethites, and all the Gittites. 600 men which came after him from Gath passed on before the king. Now these 600 men are also known as some of David's mighty men. Then said the king to Ittai, the Gittite. Now, we don't know much about Ittai, the Gittite, but we do know he's loyal. And look what the description that's given about him. Wherefore goest thou also with us? Return thee to thy place and abide with the king, for thou art a stranger and also an exile. So what David is saying to him, look, you have not been in the kingdom very long. He says, you are from exile of Gath. He says, look, just go back. Absalom's going to accept you. Just go back and stay there. Now, you say, why in the world would he do that? Well, I think he could be testing him. He knows that someday there's going to be a battle, and he knows someday he's going to be a war. He knows these 600 men that have gone with him, has fought with him through thick and thin. He wants to hear and see that this man is going to be loyal with him. He is giving him an opportunity to leave, giving an opportunity to go back because he is a stranger. But look what the response is in verse number 20. Whereas thou camest but yesterday. Now, he didn't come yesterday, but it's just a type of speech. Should I this day make thee go up and down with us? He says, why should you come with me in this journey? It is going to be long, it's going to be hard, and it's going to be a battle. Seeing I go whither I may, return thou and take back thy brother, and mercy and truth be with thee. He says, he gives him the right response. I understand, just go back. And he's saying to him, look, mercy will be upon thee. Even if he returns, he won't count it against him. But look at Ittai's response. And Ittai answered the king and said, as the Lord liveth and as my lord the king liveth, surely in what place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also shall thy servant be. He says, I'm going with you. Doesn't matter. Death, life, hardship, not hardship. You're the king. I'm coming. And it says, and David said to Ittai, go and pass over. So what do we learn about that? The loyalty that these men had to David and to their king. It would be great if Christians had that type of loyalty to God. And Ittai the Gittite passed over, and all his men and all the little ones that were with him. Verse 23, and all the country wept with a loud voice, and all the people passed over. The king also himself passed over the brook Kidron. And all the people passed over toward the way of the wilderness. So they are heading to a portion outside of Jerusalem, probably one of the last suburb areas. And lo, Zadok also and all the Levites were with them. So now we see the Levites are coming with David. And they're bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God. And they set down the Ark of God, and Abiathar went up until all the people had done passing out of the city. And the king said unto Zadok, carry back the Ark of God unto the city. If, and this is the reason why I think that David realizes he's being punished for his sin, and he's saying this. He says, I know what I've done. The Ark belongs to Jerusalem. The Ark belongs to God and the people of God. Carry back the Ark of God into the city. But look at this. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he thus say, I have no delight in thee, behold, here am I. Let him do to me as seemeth good unto him. He has given himself over to the Lord. And he says, here, look, I'm not going to take the ark with me. I don't want to take these Levites with me. He says, you go, you stay. And if the Lord allows me to, and he finds favor with me, allows me to come back, then wonderful. But he says, if the Lord chooses not to allow that to happen, let him do to me as seemeth good unto me. And what this, he's gotten to the spot of surrender. David understands what's happening. He knows why it's happening. He says, whatever the Lord wants, I'm willing to accept it. Let's keep on going. Verse number 27, the king said also unto Zadok, the priest, art thou a seer? Saying that this is a position that would be held by any king of respect, and also a position where the people would still need a seer in that day and time. He says, return into the city in peace, and your two sons with you, Ahimaaz, thy son, and Jonathan, the son of Abiathar. See, I will tarry in the plain of the wilderness until there come word from you to certify me, to let me know. So he's saying he's going to stay in a certain area of the wilderness, which is probably near the end of the suburbs of Jerusalem, waiting to hear word. He's going to put these guys as messengers to let them know what Absalom is going to do. Let's keep on going. And Zadok and Abiathar carried the ark of God again to Jerusalem, and they tarried there. Verse number 30. And David went up by the ascent of Mount of Olives and wept as he went up. He's crying, he's weeping. And you'll see here that David does not want to do any harm to Absalom. That might be one of the reasons why he didn't want to fight in Jerusalem. He knew that Absalom might lose, and Absalom might lose his life. Even though Absalom's trying to overthrow him as king, he still has an affection for his son. And he says he's weeping as he went up. He wept as he went up and had his head covered, and he went barefoot. And all the people that was with him covered every man his head, and they went up weeping as they went up. So this is a very sorrowful thing. And one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. He knows Ahithophel. You know, Absalom might think he's something special and knows a lot of things and can turn the hearts of a common person and all the men and people. But he knew that Ahithophel could give him very great advice and give him advice that would help them overcome and also help him to be a statesman or know how to run a kingdom, where Absalom would not have known how to do that. So David here doesn't stop and make this really long prayer. He doesn't even pray against Ahithophel. He gets praise that his counsel of Ahithophel would be turned into foolishness. Let's keep on going. And it came to pass that when David was come to the top of the mount where he worshiped God, behold, Hushai the Archite came to meet him with his coat rent and earth upon his head. Now, we don't know much about Hushai, but we know that many times he is mentioned in the Bible as a friend of David. You're going to see in verse number 37, so Hushai, David's friend. I believe he's mentioned at least 6 times in the Bible as David's friend. So this is a good friend of David. He is also not just a counselor, but a friend of David, and he's coming, and he wants to follow after him. Verse number 33, unto whom David said, if thou passest on with me, then thou shalt be a burden unto me. Now, why would he be a burden? There's a couple of speculations. It could be his age. He wouldn't be able to do this. David want to maybe offer special protection to his special friend. And he's saying, here you would be a burden to me, a protection, but there's something else you could do for me. So he tells Hushai, but if thou return to the city and say unto Absalom, I will be thy servant, O king, as I have been thy father's servant hitherto, so will I now be also be thy servant, that then mayest thou for me defeat the counsel of Ahithophel. So David's praying for God to turn Ahithophel's wisdom or counsel into foolishness. And at that exact same time, Hushai comes up, who also would have been a counselor of David's. And it says in verse 35, and hast thou not there with the Zadok and Abiathar, the priests? Therefore it shall be that what thing soever thou shalt hear out of the king's house, thou shalt tell it to Zadok and Abiathar the priests. Behold, they have there with them their two sons, Ahimaaz, and Zadok's son, and Jonathan, Abiathar's son. And by them ye shall send unto me everything that you can hear. So Hushai, David's friend, came into the city, and Absalom came into Jerusalem. So you see Absalom's coming in there. Hushai is coming in. David said, I want you to go in there, and I want you to try to counteract the wisdom or the counselor of Ahithophel. And you're going to see that it works. And he even tells Hushai, go talk to Zadok the priest. Let Zadok the priest know what's going on. And when you send me word, that's when I'll make my decision of where I should go and what I should do. Let's keep on going. Just a few verses in chapter 16. And when David was a little past the top of the hill, behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him. Now we remember Mephibosheth being Jonathan's son. He was also lame. We remember he was down in that land of Lodabar, and he didn't have any hope. He didn't really have much of a life. And David brought him up because of the commitment and the love he had for Jonathan, brought him up, put him at the king's table, put him and fed him and treated him just like a son, gave him a place of preeminence. He also told Ziba that he was supposed to take care of Mephibosheth and Mephibosheth's house and restored all the fields and restored all the lands. Now this man, Ziba, is here and he is getting ready to make a presentation to David. It says, with a couple of asses saddled, and upon them 200 loaves of bread and 100 bunches of raisins and 100 of summer fruits and a bottle of wine. And the king said unto Ziba, what meanest thou by these? And Ziba said, the asses be for the king's household to ride on, and the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine that such as be faint in the wilderness may drink. And the king said, and where is thy master's son? He's asking about Mephibosheth. Now, Mephibosheth is someone that he has been very kind to. Under most traditions, the king would completely wipe out the line of Saul and wipe out the line of Jonathan, so that way there would be never any type of insurrection against the king trying to take over the kingdom. Now, look what Ziba says. And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he abideth at Jerusalem, for he said, today shall the house of Israel restore me the kingdom of my father. He says Mephibosheth thinks that he's going to get the kingdom back because of the turmoil between the family, the son, and because of David. Now, this is an outright lie. Mephibosheth does not do that. And we're going to look at that towards the end of the sermon. And said the king to Ziba, behold, thine are all that pertain unto Mephibosheth. And Ziba said, I humbly beseech thee that I may find grace in thy sight, my lord, O king. And so David restores and says, everything that Mephibosheth has, you can now have. He's been deceived by this man. We do not see that Ziba actually goes with David. He actually goes back into Jerusalem, but he has in a covetous man and a greedy man, he is trying to deceive David. Now he's going to go back and try to be Absalom's friend so that way he can receive these portions of these things that he's been looking at. So we've read the most of the story here that we're going to look at tonight. What do we get out of this? We read it. It's kind of cool. It kind of sounds like it can be an action-packed story. What's happening at one king that's running for his life. It's his own son that's coming in. He has kind of went around and been deceitful and gained his interest. And now the whole kingdom loves their new king, and they're getting rid of the old king. And then there's the counselors and the advisors who's with them. There's spies in there. There's God's people. There's the Ark of God. There's the priest of God. What can we learn from this? I think there's a lot of different things. We can learn about the faithfulness of the people that are there with David. You can learn about the wickedness of other people, how Absalom had no problem saying, I want to go pay a vow to God, but he didn't want to do that. He wanted to overthrow the kingdom. He doesn't care about God. But here's the thought that God brought to my heart, and it does connect with Sunday night sermon, how not to get your heart stolen. You know, there is a number of people that is going to follow Absalom. There's a number of tribes that are not going to follow Absalom. There's three or four people in this story that chooses not to follow Absalom. And I think there's some just simple reasons here. And I think it's something that we can learn from and we can grow from, how not to let the devil steal our hearts. First thing I want you to think about, and I want you to see here, have a place of service. Have a place of service. And this is about Zadok and the priests. You go back to verses 24 all the way through 29. Zadok has a job. He is a Levite. He is bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God. Zadok hears that David is leaving. He knows he's the king. He knows he's God's anointed. And he goes to follow after David. And David says, I want you to go back and I want you to take the Ark of the Covenant back. Zadok was willing to stay with David. And here's the reason why I think Zadok was willing to stay with David for the long haul is because he had something to do. He had a place to serve. And I know after being in the ministry for now here at Faith Baptist Church for over 15 years, and I know in my own heart and in my own life that many times when people, the devil will come alongside, and the people that don't serve, don't really do a lot around the church, they are a lot easier to be picked away or taken away from the church than someone who might serve. You say, Pastor, what are you getting at? I'm saying that Zadok was interested in serving, interested in sitting with David because he had a job to do. He knew that David was a man after God's own heart. He knew David was a man that loved the Lord and worshiped the Lord. But David was saying to Zadok, I want you to go back. You don't belong to me. The ark doesn't belong to me. That belongs to God. Your service is to God. And I think it's a good picture of understanding and saying, if you have a work to do inside the church, you know what? You're gonna stay and not let the devil steal your heart a lot quicker. You say, what are you talking about? I'm saying if you have a Sunday school class that you're teaching, or if you have a bus route, or maybe something that you clean, or maybe something that you work in the sound booth or in the nursery, you have a responsibility, you have something that you're doing, the devil might come along and say, hey, they can do without you. And you say, no, I got a place of service. I got something I'm doing for God. I got something that's more important than myself. And when the devil comes around and tries to convince you and say, hey, you don't need to stay here. You don't need to do that. You don't need to serve God. You can say, no. I have something I'm doing for God. I have something I'm doing and I'm serving, and I'm not going to go because of the fact that I'm serving the Lord. You know, it may be singing in the choir. It may be even just a prayer ministry. It might be a visitation ministry. It may be whatever it is, when you're doing something for God and when you're doing something for the Lord and you've got something that you know it's your job to do and that people depend on you and people are expecting you and God has something that's doing and you're serving inside of a church, it's a lot harder for the devil to come alongside and take you out. It's a lot harder for you to just pick up and leave a church when you have something that you know that you're investing in and that you're putting your time and your heart effort and your love for the service of God and the things of God. It's a lot harder. And, you know, it can even be outside the church. It can be, you know, raising your family and you're living for the Lord and you're doing things for God and I got a purpose. I know I can't let the devil steal my heart because, you know what, this there's something more important than I'm doing. I'm not just sitting there not doing anything. I'm not just sitting there twiddling my thumbs. I have something I'm serving and doing for God, and because of that, the devil can't come and steal my heart because my heart's already somewhere else. My heart's in the service of God. My heart's in doing something for God. My heart's in for telling people about God. That's where my heart is, and I think that's what Zadok is doing. It says in verse 24, Zadok also and all the Levites that were with him bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God, and they set down the Ark of the God, and Abiathar went. You see this group of people up until the people had done passing out of the city. They were a place, and I don't know about you, but I've had people tell me, you know, Pastor, sometimes things have been hard at certain churches or even here. I didn't leave because I knew this was God's house. And this is not a man's house. It's not a pastor's house. It's not an individual's person. It's God's house. And I had this ministry, and I knew I was serving. I knew I was doing what God wanted me to do. If I wasn't doing that, it would have been easy for me to leave. But because I know that I'm doing what God wants me to do inside this church, I know it would be very difficult for the devil to try to pick me away from doing something else. Would take me away from stealing my heart from the church or stealing my heart from the service of God, because I know God's called me to do something and God desires me to do something. Now, let me also say, not every person that leaves a church does not mean the devil has stolen their heart away. I'm not saying that. I don't want you to go through and say, well, this person left the church. The pastor says that the devil stole their heart. I don't feel that way. I know sometimes people leave. Do we want them to leave? No. Do we love them? Yes. Do we miss them? Yes. Do we wish they would have stayed? Most times. But sometimes the devil, maybe God could call you somewhere else, and maybe God could give you another spot and another ministry and another place of service. But I'm telling you, we should all have a place of service. It's a service for the King. And I think you should be very careful. And sometimes most of us know people that have left churches for the wrong reasons. They left churches with wrong attitudes and bad attitudes. And they go around and they talk things that are bad and that are not necessary. And many times it's because they don't have a place of service. If they have, they let the devil get in because the devil has they don't have a place where they're serving God inside their church or even inside their home. Second thing, not only have a place of service, I think have a secret place. Look what it says in verse number 37. So Hushai, David's friend, came into the city. Now, you read all these different people. You read the guy who was a stranger and he refused to leave David. You read about Abiathar. You read about Zadok. You read about Ahithophel. You read about all these different people that had interactions with David. But there was one guy they said was his friend. And I don't know what that means. I don't know what it means to be how Hushai and David became friends, why they became friends, how they spent. But I know what a friend is. A friend is someone you spend time with. A friend is someone that you a true friend, a close friend, someone that is a confidant, is someone that you'll spend time with and you'll enjoy one another's company and you'll encourage one another to do what's right. Remember, iron sharpens iron. It's someone who you know and someone who you love and someone who you die for. You know, what does it talk about? You know, what greater love hath man than this, that he'd be willing to lay his life down for his friend? That's what I'm saying about Hushai. He had a special place in David's heart. Absalom comes and Absalom steals the hearts of the people. He goes and he makes accusations about the king. He says, you know what? The king doesn't care about you. The king won't be fair to you. The king doesn't have time for you. The king this, blah, 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 blah. Hushai says, I don't think so. I know David. I've spent time with David. I've seen how David treated me. I see how David responds to me. He has just told me, hey, that he loves me. He just told me that he cares for me. He's just told me. He can't go to Hushai and say, Hushai, David doesn't love you. He knows it. Why is that? Because David has spent time with Hushai, and Hushai has spent time with David. So what are you getting at, Pastor? Well, what is we talking about? We're talking about the devil trying to steal the hearts of us. We're talking about the devil trying to steal the hearts of Christians and the people that are in God's service and God's work. And we're using Hushai and saying, you know what? He wouldn't listen to Absalom. There's something that happened in his life that he refused to listen to Absalom. What was that? It's because he spent time with him. He became a friend of his. And you say, Pastor, but you said have a secret place. And I'm getting to the point that when we have a secret place that we meet with God, there's a secret place that's mentioned in the Bible, and it's talking about that place of fellowship, that sweet place of fellowship when it's just you and God, and you're taking that, and you're spending time with the Lord, and you're listening to God. You're speaking to him, and he's speaking to you. Maybe you're singing to him. Maybe you're spending the time and energy to be there with him, and as you spend time with him, and you know that God loves you because he's told you, and he's revealed to you in his word, you've seen him over and over again loved you, and you've seen him over and over again see you through the hardships, that when the devil comes alongside and tries to be like an Absalom and tries to steal your heart away and tries to say, hey, look at the difficulty you're going through. Hey, look at the storm that's coming in your life. Look at the hardship in your life. And Hushai would say to Absalom, you're crazy. David loves me. We should be able to look at the devil and say, devil, you're crazy. God loves me. He told me earlier today, I spent time with him and he spent time with me and we converse. We spent time together. We love one another. He is my God. He is my Lord. You say he doesn't care about me, and I say he cares about me more than he cares about the birds, and he knows all about the birds. He knows all about the number of hairs on your head. He knows all about the numbers of the lilies in the valley. He knows all those things. God does care for me. He does love me. And the reason why the devil can steal away so many hearts of so many Christians is because they don't have that secret place. They don't have that time where they're willing to spend alone with the Lord and get close to the Lord and be close to him and have that strong bond that's there. They come alongside when the trials come and the devil gets up on your shoulder and says, hey, look, that's wrong. They did you wrong. That God must not love you. God must not care about you. God wouldn't let you go through all these things. But if you spend time alone with God, you can be like Joseph in the pit and say, I know he still loves me. You can be like David when he's fighting Goliath and say, you know, is there not a cause? You can be like Daniel in the lion's den. We can be thankful. We can be like Paul and Silas in the jailhouse. We can be like Paul as he's waiting his death. And the devil might come alongside and said, hey, God doesn't care. Guess like he couldn't convince Hushai. He won't be able to convince us if we have a strong relationship with the Lord. Third thing, and I probably found this one the most interesting. I don't know if I used the right word, but I used another S. He had a place of service. He had a secret place. He had a surrender perspective. A surrender perspective. We looked in chapter 16 about this man named Ziba, who made up this lie about Mephibosheth. Now go to chapter number 19. You're going to see the end of the story. Chapter number 19, look in verse number 24. And we're skipping ahead. There's been a battle. David has won the battle. He is coming back to Jerusalem. As he comes back to Jerusalem, one of the first people that come out to meet him is Mephibosheth. Look what it says in verse 24. And Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king. Now, look what it says here. And had neither dressed his feet, nor trimmed his beard, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he came again in his peace. So Mephibosheth is lame. He's not able to make this journey himself. Look what it says in verse 25. And it came to pass when he was come to Jerusalem to meet the king said unto him, which is an obvious question, wherefore wentest not thou with me, Mephibosheth? You know, he's saying, I've treated you so well. He believes the lie of Ziba, and he's saying, why didn't you go with me? Verse 26, and he answered, my lord, O king, my servant deceived me, talking about Ziba. For thy servant said, I will saddle me an ass, that I may ride thereon and go to the king, because thy servant is lame. He was depending upon his servant to get him a transportation. And he hath slandered thy servant unto my lord the king. But the Lord the king is an angel of God. There, do therefore what is good in thine eyes. So what Mephibosheth is saying here, he says, look, Ziba lied to me. He says, and you've treated me so good that whatever you do good, it's okay with me. Now keep on going. Verse number 28, for all my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king. He says, you know, my father's house was nothing but dead men. We had no hope, no future. Yet did thou set not thy servant among them that did eat at thine own table. What right, therefore, have I yet to cry any more unto the king? He says, you took me out of a spot where I was dead. I had no hope, no future. You set me up to a spot of being with the king. He says, I have no right to complain. I have no right to cry unto the king. I have no right to say I deserve anything better. Verse 29, and the king said unto him, why speakest thou any more of this thy matters? He's saying, forget it. Okay, it's settled. I have said, thou and Ziba divide the land. So now he is allowing him and Ziba both to divide the land. He says, okay, fine. Let's not talk about this anymore. He kind of plays a politician thing here. I think he should have punished Ziba, gave it all to Mephibosheth, but I'm not David, I'm not God, so that's fine. But look at the response in verse number 30. And Mephibosheth said unto the king, yea, let him take all, for as much as my lord the king is come again in peace unto his own house. He says, I don't care about the land. You've come back, and that's enough for me. He's saying, what is the land to me? Because now I know that you're back and that you're here in peace, and I know that you're going to take care of me. I don't need anything else. Now, I want you to say, Pastor, this is a place of surrender. I think it's a place of surrender because Mephibosheth, and it's a beautiful passage if you take and you consider it, this man has been wronged. This man has, he's lame. David has been so kind to him. He calls him an angel of God. And he's saying to him, you have been so good to me that no matter what happens to me in this world, I don't really care. I have no right to complain. I have no right to ask. Whatever you decide, whatever you do in your eyes, whatever it is that you think should happen, it's okay with me. And what, isn't that great? I mean, you think it says in the verse here, in verse 24, that he didn't dress his feet, he didn't trim his beard. I don't know what dressing his feet because he was lame. You know, there was different things that were, I'm sure, I don't know. He didn't wash his clothes. You know, there's nothing wrong with dressing your feet. There's nothing wrong with trimming your beard. There's nothing wrong with washing your clothes. Those are things that should happen. But I think what he was saying was, hey, I couldn't go with David. I couldn't be there with David. But when David came back, I was going to show him, I was trying to go what he went through. Because you think about it, when David's running for his life, he's probably not trimming his beard too much. He's not getting much chance to wash his clothes. He's doing it in a way saying, yes, you were there, but you know what? I was seeing what you were going through, and I was trying maybe to experience what you were experiencing. And you continue on, you go on, and he says that that when Mephibosheth went out to see him, David asked him that question. He said, why didn't you come with me? And he says, look, this guy slandered me. This guy lied about it, and he told you lies about me. But he says, I don't care. He says, you're back, and that's all that matters. He says he can say whatever he wants to about me, and you can do whatever it is that you need to do with me. I just want you to know the truth. And he says, and the reality of the matter is you've been so good to me that no matter what you do to me today, it's okay. And you think about, as the devil tries to go and steal our hearts, and the devil comes to us and he says, you know, things are going to be tough, and there might be people who lie about us. There might be people who try to deceive us. There might be people who try to hurt us. There might be people who try to do all these things to us. And the devil's going to come to you and say, God's not good to you. And just like Mephibosheth said, you've been like an angel of God. You've been so good to me already. You've taken me out of hell and you put me on my way to heaven. You've given me the Bible. You've given me the Holy Spirit of God. You've given me so much, Lord, that no matter whatever happens in my life today, I'm going to be thankful. I'm just going to be grateful because I've seen what you've done for me in the past. I understand what you've done for me in the past. And even though life is going to get hard sometimes, and even though life may be tough, but what I used to be, but because of my relationship with you, I am now this, that if you decide to put me through a trial, if you decide to put me to death, if you decide to give all the land to Ziba and make me his servant, whatever you think is right, that's okay with me. What a place of surrender there. What a heart there that he has. What if we had that type of heart? And I like it when it comes down at the end. It says in verse number 30, Mephibosheth said unto the king, yea, let him take all, for as much as my lord the king has come again in peace unto his own house. I think what he's saying here is, as long as I can eat with the king, as long as I can see that the king is happy with me, I don't care what it is I have. Whatever it is. He says, you've come home in peace. And I can imagine there were times when David was there and he's eating with all his sons and he sees Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth is probably looking at David just smiling. He doesn't belong there. He doesn't deserve to be there. He deserves to be over in Lodabar. He deserves to be put to death because of his associations with his family. But David loves him so much and David cares so much for him that he's just happy that the fact that his angel of God has returned home safe and that whatever happens, it's okay with me. Let me encourage you tonight. How not to get your heart stolen. Number one, get a place of service. I'm not saying everybody's supposed to teach. I'm not saying everybody's supposed to sing. I'm not saying everyone's supposed to clean. I'm not saying everyone should be deacon. I'm not saying everyone should be sound booth, nursery. I know not everybody does everything. But if you have a place of service, it makes you feel like you have a home. It makes you feel like you got a reason to be here. It's just unlocking doors and locking doors and windows. If it's just, and I'm not saying just because that's an important part. They're all important parts. They're all important things. But when you have a place that you serve and you serve the Lord with a heart of gladness, it's going to be a lot harder for the devil to come to steal your heart. Second thing, have a secret place. If you have a spot you meet God with on a regular basis and you tell him that he is mine, and that you are his, and that you love each other, and you have a close, intimate relationship with one another, it's going to be really hard for the devil to come steal your heart. Because when he comes and says to you, he doesn't love you, you're going to say, no, I know that's not true. You know, sort of like if someone came to me and told me that Christian or Andrew didn't love me, I'm going to say, no, I know that's not true. Because I've heard them tell me that. I see how they act. Someone said, your wife doesn't love you. I'm going to say, no. I've heard her. I've seen her. I know her. And, you know, someone, whoever is that you're closest with in this world, and you would say, that person is a liar and doesn't love you at all. You're going to shake your head and say, you might be able to say that about somebody else. You might be able to say this about this person or this person. You're not going to be able to say that about my God. If someone told me, I use my sons and my wife, but if someone told me that my mother didn't love me, I would laugh at them in the face because no matter how much I put her through, no matter, she still cries every time she talks to me because she loves me. She might just cry because of the way I turned out. I don't know because of how bad it is, but she there's tears of joy that every time I see her, she is excited, and no one could ever convince me that my mother did not love me. And as close as you get to God, when the devil tries to convince you that God doesn't love you, he can just laugh in his face. I know he loves me. He told me he loves me. I met with him today. And third, last but not least, have a surrender perspective. I like the story of Ziba here, and I like the story of Mephibosheth, and I like the connotation that's there. He just says, you've been an angel of God to me. You've been so good to me that no matter what you do to me now, I don't really care. You've already done so much. And when we consider God and the devil comes to us and says, he's treating you wrong, he's treating you bad, he's making up lies. God, you've already done so much for me. That whatever it is that you decide to do now, it's going to be okay with me. Obviously, we don't want the bad stuff, like with the storm that's coming. You know, God, whatever you want to do, go ahead and do. You know, we're going to still love you because you've already done so much for me. And I think we could all say that in our Christian lives. He's done so much already that we can continue on loving him. Let's go ahead and stand to our feet, with heads bowed and eyes closed.